Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian-American podcast at ItalianAmericanLife.com. I'm your host, Frankie D, and today is the second part of our podcast series on Christopher Columbus. We are partnered with the Paul and Ann Rubino Italian-American Studies Program at Loyola University Chicago, and the director of the program, Carla Simonini. And today our guest is Professor William Cano from Seton Hall University, an American scholar and an endowed chair of the Joseph M. and Geraldine C. LaMotta Chair in Italian Studies at Seton Hall University, and an Andrew Carnegie Fellow. Welcome to both of you to our show,
which today is
about the history of the holiday of Christopher Columbus.
Yeah. I'd like to join in, Frank, with welcoming Professor Connell, and we're so pleased that you accepted our invitation to speak today. And your research is well noted in the field of Italian history and Italian-American history, and I'm going to give a shout out to one of your works, which I use frequently, the Rutledge History of Italian Americans, which you co-edited with Stanislaw Pugliese, who at Hofstra University. So this, anyone who doesn't have this should refer to it. It's an amazing collection of essays that document Italian American history from a variety of perspectives. So thank you for your hard work on that. And today we're hoping in particular to concentrate on the history of Columbus Day as a national celebration. That's our focus for this particular podcast. And I was very struck, you've written several articles on this. Some have been published online, others have been in scholarly journals. I want to read a quote from one of your articles that I really stood out to me, because when we talk about it's so complex. We have Columbus, the historical figure. We have the Columbus, the holiday. We have Columbus, the myth, Columbus, the symbol, et cetera, et cetera. But when talking about the holiday, you write, most of the media noise about the Columbus Day holiday is about the holiday's excuse, not the holiday itself. Realizing this helps to put matters in perspective. So I love that. I love the way, let's talk about the holiday. And the way you start that article, Frank and I were talking about this earlier, it's so American. The nature of a holiday, the idea, you speak of how we as Americans need holidays to take time off, otherwise we might not take it, because we will want to make extra money, or we want to advance our career or impress the boss. I mean, that is such an American mindset. So I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more about this idea of what holidays represent in the United States. And then maybe we can talk specifically about the Columbus Day holiday, starting with the first time it was recognized as a national holiday in 1892. So I'm going to let you speak. I'm going to mute myself so I don't interfere.
No, well, thank you, Carla and Frank. Thank you for your introductions. Thank you for your invitation. It's an honor to be here, especially to speak to a Chicago audience, a city that's dear to my heart. Let's see. So yes, that quote, I enjoyed writing those sentences. I'm a historian, we all know people who take the Columbus holiday extremely seriously, whether they're in favor of it or opposed to it. As a historian, I understand that there's a big difference between holidays and monuments and what happened back then. And so I professionally care more about what happened back then, and realize that holidays and monuments are really imperfect idealizations that are put up for their own purposes in their own time, and are connected, yes, back to events in the past, but in sometimes convoluted ways or misrepresented ways, and that needs to be taken into consideration. And so I try not to get upset about Columbus, and I try not to evangelize for him either. I just, in terms of the present day, I think it would help if people would step back and wonder why Columbus matters so much, this man who lived 500 years ago. And but then studying the holiday and its celebrations, that has its own history too. It's very much worth studying. Just as I study the events around 1492, it's also fascinating as a historian to study the events around the celebrations of Columbus. And they have their own history that should interest historians. And I think in the end it helps explain some of the passions that people feel about this today. You asked, Carla, when it started in the United States. The first celebrations are in 1792, when it's understood that it's the 300th anniversary of Columbus landing in the New World. And we had in the United States a new country. So there was this sense of it all, and a country that became possible when the Atlantic was crossed for the first time in an enduring way. And that really is with Columbus. The name Columbia already appears in the 1730s or so as a way of, a poetic way of referring to the new land. It's different from America. That is, it's just, in literature, oftentimes we'll come up with a different name. Just as we use United States and America as synonyms, so Columbia became a way that poets could refer to this land, or orators in their speeches, and they'd say it with a kind of wink, saying, I'm not saying America, I'm saying Columbia, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. And that's where a lot of the naming comes, you state in your research too, like the District of Columbia, Columbus, Ohio, all of the Columbia University, that all relates to that early reference to Columbia.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's picked up with the country of Columbia when it's a new nation, again, made possible by, and it's a way of indicating that something new is starting here. It has roots in Europe. And it's in a new land with new peoples, new species of flora and fauna that are crucial to what is new here, so a new name seems right. There was also an understanding that already there had been a long understanding that it was really Columbus who got here first, the idea that that it's named America after Amerigo Vespucci was something that people would joke about, and so Columbia seemed appropriate to at least put that name also on the table.
Yeah, how did that other guy get the naming right, sort of thing?
And that's another different interesting story. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. So, but it is worth pointing out that the two, Columbus and Vespucci, knew each other very well.
Yes. Yes.
They were buddies for years.
I recently watched that old movie that starred Gerard Depardieu that came out in 1992 to celebrate the quincentennial, and they make reference to that, to Vespucci, you know, getting there and landing on the mainland and getting the naming right. So I know that was fictionalized, but. So I know that there's this long history of Columbus Day going all the way back to colonial times. But in your article, you specifically talk about the first time it was declared a national holiday, which was in 1892.
Right.
I was aware of that, and I was aware of one of the incidents you reference in relation to that. But I was wondering if you could give a little bit more information, because I was surprised by the Wounded Knee connection as well with President Harrison. So I was hoping enlighten our listeners a little bit more about that.
Sure. Okay. So, there are celebrations. 1792 is big. In the 1830s, 40s, you start to have clubs celebrating Columbus Day. October 12th is just it's a date that people could put on their calendars, remember, celebrate every year. I think on the West Coast, it's in the 1860s. Really, after the Civil War, you start to have a progression of holidays. Abraham Lincoln starts Thanksgiving during the Civil War. Decoration Day becomes Memorial Day. And so you start to develop a kind of regular calendar of holidays. And Columbus Day enters into that with Italian participation, but it's really a country, it's an American phenomenon that begins well before the mass immigration of the 1880s from Italy and from Southern Europe and so forth. In 1892, President Harrison, who's I think an underrated one-termer of a president, felt that it was time to celebrate 400 years as a big thing. You had an underwater cable across the Atlantic. An impressive railroad network across the continent. The frontier was closing. The Indian Wars were over. And there were lots now, this is where mass immigration is approaching its peak from Europe, with lots of people from Italy, Southern Europe, Eastern Europe. There's a lot of resistance to that by nativists, kind of xenophobia, anti-immigration sentiment at the time. Then there were public schools, big thing that the Democratic Party and that Harrison also supported. So around the world, the Spanish wanted to celebrate Columbus Day. There was a sense that the world was at an important moment in 1892. And President Harrison doesn't jump on the bandwagon, rather he decides this is something for the country to do, to bring the country together. Now, in the background of this, there had been two difficult episodes that I like to highlight just as suggesting the need for unification. And I think they suggested them to, they suggested it to Harrison also. Namely, you had in 1891, the massacre at Wounded Knee, where Harrison himself sent in the troops that performed this. He wasn't a pro Indian by any means, there was the rounding up of this last group of Lakota Sioux, including Sitting Bull, and a deaf male Sioux. I didn't understand why he was supposed to give up his gun, and it fired off, whereupon the United States cavalry massacred more than 100 men, women, and children. This was a troubling episode. Harrison appointed a commission to investigate, but nothing happened. The men weren't charged, and then they were given by the Congress the Congressional Medal of Honor, something that Sioux activists today still lament and would like to have corrected. Just a couple of months later in New Orleans, there was a trial of 12 Italian Americans who'd been rounded up almost at random in the Italian Quarter. Mostly Sicilian immigrants, after the police chief had been shot. The jury acquitted half of them. They couldn't come to a decision on the others. Local politicians decided that this somehow the jury had been, they charged the jury had been suborned, raised a mob that stormed the parish prison in New Orleans and lynched these men, which very much upset President Harrison. This is all in the run-up to Columbus Day. It very much upset President Harrison. He appointed a commission of inquiry, and the commission of inquiry again came to no resolution. In this case, Harrison decided, because there were strong protests from the Italian government, most of these men hadn't been naturalized yet, that Harrison decided to pay reparations to the government, and which would then pass this money to the families of those who were killed. But it raised a big storm particularly in the East Coast. In Congress, there were calls to impeach Harrison because he paid reparations to the Italian government. Young Theodore Roosevelt said that those Dagos got what they deserved in a letter that I discovered in the Roosevelt papers online. The New York Times published an editorial saying, lynchings aren't good, but this one probably did the right thing. So Harrison did not announce Columbus Day specifically in response to these things, but they were certainly things that were key moments in his administration in the months before the proclamation. The proclamation intended to unify the country, get everybody realizing that there's something to celebrate here that's not about or about New England, but it's about the land and all the people who are here, and the people who are coming here, and the people who have always been here. And it's wonderful and heartwarming to read about the first Columbus Day Parade in New York City, where the emphasis is on schooling. So they have a huge parade of the public school kids, followed by the parochial school kids, followed by the Hebrew school kids, followed by the Carlisle Indian School, followed by the Dante Alighieri Italian School, and then the college kids from Columbia and NYU. It's a really, it's a sense of coming together, and the idea was, let's overcome our prejudices. Let's understand that schools are a way of making everybody American and American citizens.
I love the way that you described that. Oh, go ahead, Frank. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I found that very interesting in your article, that the initial Columbus Parade was like that, with school kids, with all kinds of different people, grammar school kids, college kids. And I wondered where along the line did it become this Italian American parade?
Yeah,
that's start out like that.
It did not, and it started out as a holiday that the WASP settlers on the East Coast were celebrating in 1792. I do think that one of the reasons activists have been targeting Columbus in recent decades is because it became it's become more strictly an Italian American phenomenon. There's not the broader participation that I still remember as a kid in the 1960s, that you had living in the suburbs of New York, you had on TV the Columbus Day Parade had representatives of all races, the policemen, the sanitation men. It was a big sort of universal holiday, marking the beginning of the school year in a lot of ways. Had a month of classes, and it was just enough time for the teachers to prepare their kids to march. And the weather was still good. But that's the 1960s. When does it change? Let's go back. There's strong Italian participation from the 1880s, 1890s, especially, when Italian immigrants see this as a way to gain recognition from white-dominated society. It's a kind of entry into a larger American society. And then Italian Americans are very active in creating holidays, because Harrison's holiday was a one-time affair in 1892. They're very active in promoting the holiday state by state, in Colorado, Illinois, New York, and so forth, but working hand in hand with, and often these Italians would be led by the Knights of Columbus, who were founded by an Irish priest, and again having Italian participation somewhat later in the Knights. I mean, just enrollment came later. And then the Hispanic participation. So a friend of mine, John Viola, collects old posters and Italian America, Italian Americana, says that in the first decades of the 20th century, you always had Italian and Spanish flags together in the announcements. And it's interesting that in Manhattan, we still have a Hispanic Heritage Parade the Sunday before Columbus Day. Hmm. So there's a separating out that takes place, which leaves the Italians pretty much alone. When does that happen? I think, I'm thinking in the New York context, but New York, because it's the media center, has influence around the country. I think it's especially in the 1970s, a period of neighborhood battles over schooling, white flight to the suburbs, there were many Italian American communities that were in a way circling the wagons. And then being also seen in hostile ways by some of the other minorities and ethnicities in the cities. So I think that's in the 70s. And interestingly, it happens just after 1968, when you have the passage of the Uniform Holiday Act that makes it, instead of a holiday, it begins as a holiday by presidential proclamation under FDR in 1934. But you need a presidential proclamation every year until 1968, when under the LBJ administration, Columbus Day enters as one of those Monday holidays that's on the federal calendar. And today, it's something that very few of the people, either the activists or the defenders of Columbus Day, realize. As they fight their battles about San Francisco and Seattle and Los Angeles and Berkeley and all of the different places, that it would take an act of Congress to take Columbus Day off of the federal schedule of holidays. Now, local states, municipalities can celebrate it however they like, or they can decide not to celebrate. So remember, Arizona held out on Martin Luther King Day for a long time. So that can happen. But still, the banks and the stock market are going to close because of Columbus Day. That's why they close in Berkeley, California today, because of Columbus Day on the federal holiday. And an act of Congress would be a very hard thing to do.
In your opinion, concentrating on New York, you said that in the 70s is when it kind of changed and went real Italian. Do you think that, I probably don't remember exactly the name, but that group, the Italian Civil Liberties, that was like in 1970, 71?
Yeah, I'm sure that's a big part of it.
Did that have an effect on this Columbus story?
Absolutely. It's an amazing episode in Italian American history. It's called, referring to the Italian American Civil Rights League.
Okay? That's it, yes.
And it was founded by Joe Colombo,
yes.
who was the head of the Gambino crime family, a mafioso, complaining about Italian Americans being linked to organized crime. And for a brief period, there was a big impact. In the wake of the civil rights movement in the South for African Americans, there were created civil rights groups for Puerto Ricans, for Native Americans. Frank Sinatra tried to do one for Italian Americans, but that flopped. And Colombo jumps on this bandwagon, as it were. How to put it, make some strategic alliances with politicians, with the Jewish Defense League. They got involved in gun running. He organizes this Unity Day rally in 71 that brings 15,000 people, mostly Italian-American, out in Central Park at the Columbus Monument to protest. And they felt like their neighborhoods were under attack and their schools were under attack, and especially in Brooklyn and in the Upper East Side, East Harlem a bit. That Little Italy was emptying out, or it hadn't already. So they felt under attack, and there were a lot of people who said, well, you know, he's just a businessman, Mr. Colombo. He himself claimed to be a real estate, run a real estate company, the Cantalupo real estate company in Brooklyn. Unfortunately for him, after that first big successful rally, an FBI agent, his assistant rather, left a briefcase in a taxi cab that was then passed on to the FBI, and it listed all of the people who contributed to the Italian Unity League, and there were big donations from the heads of the crime families, who all then got interviewed by the FBI. And these guys got unhappy with Colombo because he'd spilled the beans on them. And Colombo ended up the target of an assassination at the next Unity Day rally. He survived in a coma, vegetative state for about 5 years, and then died. So that's a long way of saying this is a horrible, violent story. It became for a while a dangerous profession to be an Italian American civil rights activist.
Right, but I'll tell you, I was just a little boy, and I've heard stuff about it. It fascinates me because of the fact that these were huge numbers. I mean, this rally had huge numbers. Their membership was outrageous. I believe they had plans to, either had the plans or actually had purchased like acres and acres of land. They were going to build a, I don't know if it was a camp or a school. I mean, they had huge ambitions with this. I believe his second in command for this group, this organization, was a former principal of a school. I cannot recall his name, but I mean, it fascinates me because today we have trouble getting, you know, 100 Italian Americans to come to something. And this was just like membership was like 100,000 members. And like you said, at the rally. So I had a feeling that they had an effect on the parade itself, because apparently whatever they did, this group, they created a lot of pride, and they created a lot of unity.
They created a lot of pride, a lot of unity, but then they also created a kind of embarrassment. So the National Italian American Foundation was founded as a way of getting together all of the clean businessmen, Lee Iacocca and others, who wanted to demonstrate they had no ties to the sort of organized crime that Colombo was involved in. And yet they were upset about, because you had the mafia movies coming out, Godfather, and which in the media, in its reception, definitely built up some pretty bad stereotyping of Italian Americans in the 60s and 70s.
Without a doubt. I remember. The Godfather changed it all in the perception of Americans towards Italian Americans. And it never really got better after that first Godfather movie. Other subject, Carlisle.
Yeah, that takes us away from the. But I think it's that crucial decade of the 70s of urban unrest, white flight, Nixon's white ethnics politics, that resulted in a kind of focusing in on the Italian identity in the parade.
I was.
No, it's not. And I can say it's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I mean, there's a strong cultural, colorful, beautiful element to that. Italian Americans, there are 17 million of them in the country, according to the census. And they have contributed mightily to the building of this country. And then there's Columbus, who started it all. He made it all possible, regardless of his misdeeds and maladministration in various.
I'm just going to break in and say a few things here regarding that.
Yeah, please. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, no. It's fascinating. I know it's interesting the timing. You talked about the early 1970s and then becoming the act of Congress as the federal holiday in 1968. You know, this coincides with the ethnic revival movement in the United States. So certainly that's not a coincidence at all. And one of the things I noted in my own background, I'm from Providence, Rhode Island, and I had a very similar upbringing. You know, when I was a young girl, it was, you know, everybody's holiday. And then as I got older, it became more associated with the Italian American community. And it had to do, like you said, with that, our little Italy was Federal Hill. And people were beginning to leave Federal Hill, but the businesses were still there. So Columbus Day became a celebration on Federal Hill where all the vendors were out and you had carnivalesque beer, and it became more associated with the Italian American community at a point when the little Italy communities were sort of dissolving, you know. So I think that's an important point. The other thing was in your article, you talk about the malleability of Columbus as a, you know, as a figure and how he has served, you know, in Harris' time. It was a figure that was supposed to be unifying. It really was on the side of assimilation that everybody was being brought into the American fold. And I was impressed. Harrison comes off very, very sympathetic in your analysis that he went on a limb to give the reparations to the Italians against what Congress wanted. And he seems to have had some regret for what happened with the wounded knee. So it's interesting to see the human side of him and how it affected his policy decision. But so this idea of Columbus being malleable, and for Harrison being this assimilationist type figure, and then how he got adopted by the Italians as a way of looking at their unique ethnicity and going forward. You know, it's just interesting how the holiday developed and changed over time according to different needs and different populations that decided to embrace it. And one thing I loved in one of your articles, you call Columbus the Oedipus of world history. Because there, you know, we are delving into his legacy now. Like, who was he? A sinner or a saint? Was he a bad guy? Was he a good guy? And I was hoping maybe you could speak a little bit more about why you use that term, the Oedipus of world history. I thought that was a really effective metaphor to help us understand him, you know, from our contemporary perspective. So
thanks, Carla.
A little on that.
those are nice comments. And I'll get back to malleability in a minute, but the Oedipus. Oedipus in Greek myth, you'll know, he solved the riddle of the Sphinx that was isolating the city of Thebes, and people had to solve this riddle or else the Sphinx was this monster who killed him. But then he goes on to, and is welcomed as this great hero for having destroyed this enemy of the city. But unbeknownst to himself, innocent in terms of his own knowledge, he marries his mother, he kills his father along the road, and in the end, it's this great tragedy when these things are revealed to him. Columbus solved the riddle of the trade winds, so he made it all happen, and was celebrated as this great hero. But on the other hand, there were some terrible things that happened as a result of the bringing of the continents together. Columbus's administration on the island of Hispaniola was not good. It was so poor that the Spanish monarchs fired him and came back to Spain in chains. It was known back then. People who want to put Columbus on trial now as a way of defending him, filmmakers, and I tell them, no, don't do that. He was already declared guilty back in 1502 by the Spanish crown, okay? What they liked and celebrated in him was he had this ambition as a navigator and as a sea captain. He was an amazing explorer. And yes, he was a poor administrator. It's hard to imagine under those circumstances with the small Spanish colony and the needs and the desires that they had, that things could have gone differently. And certainly with respect to the disease, the exchange of diseases, the demographers now estimate that maybe 70 to 80% of the population in the Americas died of diseases that came from Europe. But those would have spread if St. Francis of Assisi had come across the ocean in a boat. And those vast, vast majority of those people died without having seen a white European face. So in a sense, is Columbus caused these things, or his trip did, but he's in a way like Oedipus in the sense that he didn't mean to kill his father and marry his mother. So that's why I use that analogy. And there is a kind of tragedy and sadness in looking back and seeing how this great hero is now vilified by.
Your term. You say that he was responsible, but not necessarily guilty.
Yeah, I guess, but you shouldn't put him. He was guilty of being a really poor administrator, and he did some bad things.
Yes, he did.
He had people hanged. He had their tongues cut out, hands cut off. But those were all
real things.
Normal parts of justice as administered.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah.
One of the problems, I think, to understand is he really was a ship's captain, and the kind of discipline you have aboard a ship with 30 crewmen, you worry about mutiny, you're trying to get them to sail into the unknown, flogging is common, you hang people who speak up to you from the yardarms. You've got to keep these men together in a really difficult situation. Columbus sailed in the Mediterranean against Muslims who would capture crews and enslave everybody. You take that kind of discipline that the sailors are also used to, but apply it to an island of maybe a half a million inhabitants and 5,000 uppity Spanish nobles who don't like this low-class Italian who's in charge. See a recipe for disaster. And it really was a disaster. The numbers of people who died. Very sad.
Absolutely. And I mean, in preparing for this, I've been doing a lot of reading, and that's something we're going to be encouraging our listeners to do as well, to look, to go back and read Las Casas and go back and read all the different sources and, piece it together. He's a very complex figure. And getting back to the holiday, one thing I know you talked about the history of holidays in the United States, that we're not ostensibly a religious country, and so that our holidays reflect more what you call civic religion, so that they've looked at founding fathers and other things that relate to our history as a nation, and that when Columbus came into the play with that, he was in the founding father, and he wasn't from the Civil War. So it was that opened up a new way of understanding what it meant to be American.
And I think there's a celebration of the land is important. So if you're in Chicago, Harrison also proclaimed the Great Chicago Exposition. There wasn't time to get it up. He's thinking, he's thinking about things as they go. He proclaims the holiday a few months in advance, and at the same time says, let's do a World's Fair to celebrate all of this, but they can't organize it until 1893 when it opens up. But that fair is a great example of what they thought multicultural meant in 1893. Exhibits and peoples from around the world in native dress, with spectacles, dancing, exhibits, that are fun to read about today, that included all of the different peoples and yet celebrated this country, which, for the reasons I said earlier, has come together. Railroads, the end of the frontier, looking forward in a positive way to incorporating all of the immigrants who are coming. And at that point, also bringing the Native Americans into the American system. For good and bad, and with all the stuff we've learned about reservations and Indian policy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I find, and it's interesting too, because one of the statues that was recently taken down here in Chicago is the statue from the Columbian Expedition, the one that stood there. And it was, you know, you talked also in your article, a lot of people, New York gets a lot of attention for obvious reasons because of having such a large Italian immigrant population. And they talk about, you know, Carlo Bazzotti, who raised the funds for the Columbus statue there. But here in Chicago, the one in Arrigo Park, that too was a local fundraising from, they had taken the statue down from the exposition and it sat like in a warehouse, I think, for a whole bunch of years. And they were trying to figure out what to do with it. And just, you know, just like in New York, it was the local population that raised money to erect it in Arrigo Park. And so there's this sense of, you know, real ownership of Columbus that, you know, we our hard-earned money. This was not a rich community necessarily. And he was brought to Arrigo Park to celebrate the revitalization of that Little Italy neighborhood too. So there's those types of bonds of, I guess, affection that go along with what he represents.
Right. I mean, there are monuments around the country, as you know, lots of them, and each created under particular circumstances with particular organizations or donors. It goes back to your theme, the theme you raised, Carla, of malleability. That we really don't know what Columbus looked like. There are two portraits from around then, but they look very different. One of them has him with a blonde hair, hair. So there was a Danish scholar who suggested that he was descended from the Vikings who attacked Liguria in the 800s AD. So he had Danish ancestry. So we don't really know what he looked like. And if you go statue by statue, it's surprising the variety of facial types of the different Columbuses who are out there.
Professor, I really like how you said the holiday marks the event, not the person.
It's October 12th. Yeah, that's right. And I think, I'm, as a historian, I'm hard put to say that there was a more important specific date that we know in human history. You could say the atom bomb, but fortunately it hasn't changed life yet in the same way. We might, you know, 100 years from now, we might say that, yeah, that was the moment that changed things, but let's hope not, okay? You might say, the invention of agriculture, but we don't know when that happened. You know, they used to say it was, it would be God's creation, some 5,000 years before Christ, if you add up Methuselah and Noah and how long they were, or you could say the birth of Christ, or Muhammad's flight to Medina from Mecca. From our perspective today, I think that October 12th moment, it's hard to say that there's a specific date in human history that we know that we can put on a calendar that changed our world more. So I've got no problem marking it. It's a democracy. If people want to change it, if they want an act of Congress, fine. If people in some town don't want to celebrate it, fine. But as a historian, that date's always going to be there as a huge historical marker.
Yeah. And you're not alone in that position. I know Neil deGrasse Tyson has been on the record, as an astrophysicist from the scientific point of view, saying the same thing, that it marks a point where the history of humankind irrevocably changed it. And so that, and the date is what represents that, for better or for worse, whatever it is, it changed, it opened a whole new era of human history. And the holiday recognizes that date more so than the person. So very...
So, I don't know. An interesting... Oh, Frank, did you say something?
No, it's okay.
An interesting question is Italian Americans and Native Americans. How and why is there conflict there? The Italian Americans, there were some who went out west, but even those tended to go towards Colorado or
California.
Southwest, or above all California. But the ethnic group that came into contact regularly with Native Americans most was Germans, German Americans, and Italian Americans tended to stay in the cities. And so it's sort of ironic that somehow these groups that have had little contact or reason to dislike one another or should somehow be pitted against one another. And so I've spent some time in recent months researching and trying to figure out why and how that happened. And it helps to go back, starting in the 70s, 1970s, there's a book published called Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. It became a bestseller, and it really awakened the United States to this history of tragic history of the treatment of Native Americans through the 19th and 20th centuries, the policies of putting them on reservations, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and then the earlier massacres that were involved. That became a touchstone. You have the creation of the American Indian Movement. And I remember as a child seeing a picture on the front page of the New York Times of the first protest at Plymouth Rock on Thanksgiving Day, which was proclaimed by the activists a National Day of Mourning.
I remember that too, growing up in Providence, Rhode Island, yes.
Yeah, right. And it still continues, and they still have a National Day of Mourning on Thanksgiving Day. If you look at it from a question of tactics or strategy, it wasn't the best date on the calendar to choose. It's cold in Boston on Thanksgiving. It's a holiday that everybody loves. The turkey, football, it's just not something that it's going to fly if you're looking for massive public participation. I began wondering, well, why? So then there's a shift, really, that starts in 1992 to Columbus Day. And one possible reason is that the weather's better. Another possible reason is that Italian Americans had become a kind of easier target, having taken a national holiday and made it an ethnic holiday. A PR person could have whispered in someone's ear that, just as happened with the mafia movies, if you get a bunch of Italian Americans angry, you get a lot of colorful, free publicity, like happened with The Sopranos, for instance. The more protests, the more people watch it. Huh? So those are part of it. But another aspect that's interesting is that the focus on Columbus starts in 1992, and particularly in Berkeley, where I did my graduate work, and so I know some of the people who are involved. They're friends of mine. I just observe. I'm a historian, the name Indigenous is not one that Native Americans use for themselves. It's a name that's used in the Spanish version in Latin America to refer to people who speak Quechua from Bolivia and Peru, or Tzlatzol in the Chiapas, Mexico. And you had had, since the 60s and 70s, attempts by leftist politicians in Latin America to activate or to move, to involve indigenous peoples in movements against a sort of middle class and upper class elite in the cities that had European ancestry, partial European ancestry. And what happens, and those movements did target Columbus in a more dramatic way. We're talking about the Spanish Latino world, and it's interesting. If I went, was trying to find out where was the first time a Columbus statue was pulled down, and it was actually in Venezuela, in Caracas, in 2004. Hugo Chavez encouraged a crowd to put a noose around Columbus's neck, put red paint on the statue, and pull it down. And so there's a kind of switch to Indigenous Peoples Day. There's a branching out and a kind of bigger alliance involved that also involves a part of the Latino community that Italian Americans really aren't aware of. My buddies in Manhattan at the Columbus Citizens Foundation, who organized the parade, still they think they're dealing with Dances with Wolves, but it's a much bigger thing, and it also involves these indigenous people who've now moved to the United States and immigrated. Immigration from Latin America now includes a lot more of indigenous people. That's why in Miami, when the statue was pulled down, you find Spanish words spray painted on the pedestals.
That's a very important history to bring up. We've actually reached out to one of my colleagues in the Latin and Latinx Studies program to talk about that history, which we're hoping to do in a later interview. But yes, and you know, again, going back to that malleability of Columbus, that Columbus here, the Italians felt disenfranchised during that period. So here Columbus is being appropriated as a way to combat their marginalization, to claim full belonging, whereas it's just the opposite in the scenarios that you just described, that those who were, you know, greatly marginalized, discriminated against, second-class citizens, saw taking him down as the means of meaningful access. So just how complex he is as a figure, as a symbolic figure, and what he represents in different contexts. So yeah, I think that's important to bring up.
Well, Professor, I wanted to say thank you for all the insight. And I also thank you for your articles. I'm not a scholar, and it kind of simplifies this holiday, okay? And it makes you really think about the way you describe it. One last thing I wanted to leave all of us, because it would probably take another hour or two. I can't help but think you kind of talked on this. Okay, so if the Italians kind of took over this Columbus parade 70s on, so that's about 50 years, this desire to eliminate this parade and this holiday, would it be, and I don't mean to be, sensitive or anything, but would it be as strong if it didn't become associated with Italian Americans? Since we took over this holiday and this parade, and it became mainly about us, in some capacity how this happened, you know, but it mainly is about us now, and now there's this major push to eliminate it. Would it be as strong if it had remained a holiday for everyone? I don't know. This is something that would, you know, take another hour.
That's a what if, and a question of how you would move forward. For instance, could you go back or not? Or maybe you need a group. You would need a group to defend it and push it forward and organize it anyway.
I believe in Chicago, we do try to include, and we do have many groups in this Columbus parade in Chicago. I'm talking about, well, not the one that, well, last October, the last few years, they go out of their way to do that. I think the powers that be that are against us, it really doesn't matter anymore to them.
Yeah. Right. I suggested a friend of mine, a friend of yours, Fred Gardefe, told me about the 1992 Chicago parade, where the governor invited in representatives from Indian reservations in the state of Illinois. And it was a quite moving parade with burning of sage as a Native American way of marking remembrance. And I think that something like that could perhaps be involved. I suggested to the Columbus Citizens Foundation in New York that they reach out through Governor Cuomo to the Indian reservations upstate and try to involve them. But I think the governor was involved in, had a feud with the Seneca tribe about cigarette taxes at the moment, at that point, and it didn't go very far. I've also been thinking about another suggestion would be to reach out to, in Connecticut, where there are two very large Native American casinos, with a largely Italian American clientele. Connecticut is a big state for Italian Americans.
Yes, and lots of Rhode Islanders flock to those casinos. Right. Well, yes.
And why not have some
family?
Why not have some floats in the Fifth Avenue parade? That strikes me as a possibility. Another thing that I've suggested is to try to involve humor in things. A little more. There are great comedic skits about Columbus that you can find on YouTube. Flip Wilson does a terrific one. Realize it's history. It's happened. We have to live with it. Let's try to make it livable rather than erase it.
Very good points.
I agree with that. That's so important. I think, you bring up in one of your articles that one of the first protesters of a Columbus Day celebration were other Italian Americans.
There were Italian American anarchists who are
who saw, again, that malleability. They saw in him that imperialist conqueror.
And
ethnicity identified with that.
and quite seriously, they're the intellectual ancestors of Italian American academic friends of mine who are dead set on eliminating Columbus and his statues and his holiday.
Yeah.
There's a kind of continuity in Italian American anarchism also.
That activism. Well, I think we've talked over an hour, so thank you so much for your time. I guess I want to my last thoughts are, this emphasis that it is a federal holiday, in lacking an act of Congress, it's going to stay on the books as a federal holiday. It marks a date in time when something happened that changed the world. And, let's maybe focus less on whether Columbus is, a sinner or a saint, and take a look instead at what this means to us today, For better or for worse, we are the inheritors of that history and are living here in the present as a result of it. And how do we get along, and how do we make sense of things today? So
I agree 100%. Yeah. Yes. And Professor, thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I really enjoy your insight on all this.
Yeah. Pleasure's all mine.
I do too, Professor Connell. I thank you so much for your, we're going to put links up to the articles. Like Frank said, they're very readable. So, it's sometimes people get scared. I know even my students, when I give them something from a scholarly journal, but you've written, they're very accessible. They make you think. They propose things in different ways, and they bring up aspects of the history of this holiday that I don't think a lot of us are aware of. And if we're going to debate about this, and we need to be informed.
Thank you, Carla. Thank you, Frank. And all the best to your listeners as well.
Thank you so
much. Thank you. Thank you so much.